Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Stuff I Heard podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Peek, and we are entering into March Madness with college basketball. I don't know if anybody's watching this but me, but I've heard sayings that the women's college basketball this year, largely due to the success of South Carolina, LSU, UConn, Stanford, you know, teams like that, that the women's teams games have been bringing in more viewership than the men's teams. And I was wondering about that. I was wondering why would that be? You know, I've made a comment before that I grew up watching, you know, Michael Jordan play basketball back when there were only a few channels to watch anything on. And living here in South Carolina and him playing college basketball in North Carolina, it wasn't that hard of a stretch to be able to watch him on one of the major networks, considering the fact that they were in the postseason, and you get to see that level of talent come out of college. Now, we did live in an area where, weirdly, we could pick up channels from WGN out of Atlanta here in Florence, South Carolina. I don't know what it was about WGN. They really pushed their signal hard. This is before cable, before, you know, you could instantly just click on an app and watch whatever you wanted to. A signal had to be broadcast from somewhere, and then maybe WGN bounced it off of other towers or figured out how to or something, but we could pick it up here. So when Michael Jordan got drafted by the Bulls, we could watch the Bulls games here. We could even watch them in Atlanta. I remember living outside of Atlanta and watching Bulls games, and it was fantastic, but it was the level of play that you understood, even myself as a kid understood, that these are players that are at the top of their game and they're competing with one another in a team sport, and yet one player significantly is better than most of the other players around them. And we're seeing that right now in women's college basketball, largely part to Caitlin Clark. She plays for Iowa, and she has just been breaking records right and left, putting on a clinic of basically how to be a premier basketball player in women's college basketball. It's been fun to watch. She made a comment before the game yesterday that she is starting to feel the pressure of, oh, you know, people are really paying attention. And I guess it is a extra level of nerve-wracking when you realize that so many people are watching you play. But then, you know, she goes out and scores another 30 points and they win again, and in impressive fashion, you know, by 21 points. Again, the whole team is good. The whole team is fantastic. Iowa has done a great job of cultivating a great team, and, you know, they've really been impressive to watch. But also, I wanted to see LSU because they have put on an incredible team and they are competing. And South Carolina, I mean, Dawn Staley, I've said it before, she's going to go down in history as being one of the best coaches ever. If she isn't already, I'm sure she should be if that conversation hasn't been had. But yeah, she continues to put quality players out there and coach them in a way that they find a way to win over and over and over. South Carolina had a tough game on Friday against Indiana and just barely won by, I don't know, 6 points, 5 points, something like that. They play today, and so that'll be fun to watch. I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, at 1 o'clock, South Carolina plays Oregon State, so should be fun. And then Iowa has a rematch with LSU on Monday. They played last year for the national championship and LSU won. And this will be kind of a rematch. Now, some of their players obviously have gone on to other things, but some of the returning players, this is their final season and they're going to compete, and it's going to be pretty awesome. So, yeah. Now, why would people watch them over the guys' team? Why? I mean, for years, guys have dominated viewership for stuff like this. And I know why, but I'm kind of curious what you think. This is my opinion, okay? Because this is stuff I heard. I can tell you about the stuff that I believe that I've talked to other people about, and they kind of agree, but maybe I'm wrong. Now, for years, it was known that the NBA would just draft talent straight out of high school. I mean, you get players like LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and, you know, many like him that just came straight out of high school, went straight to the pros. And it's rare that any of them actually turn out to be talented. A lot of them have talent, but can't compete with grown men because they're high school kids. And so there was a long time of these younger players going into the NBA and fizzling out. And I heard it said one time that the largest percentage of people who go broke were people who got drafted to go to the NBA because they had no life experience. They had no training on what to do with their money. They would get a little bit of money. They'd buy everybody everything, and then they'd be broke. And at a certain point, they changed the rules a little bit. And they said, no, you got to go to college for at least a year. Well, the way the college thing works out is they would go into their first year. They could show up to the majority of their classes or didn't necessarily have to pass anything to qualify to play that year. And then they would just leave and go to the NBA after a one-year stint in college, quote unquote. And it was all seen as a big sham. I mean, everybody could see through it and be like, oh, come on. All these players are with these teams for 1 year. You know, I can't tell you how many countless kids I watched go through Kentucky and Texas and UConn and stuff like that. 1 year, and then they're in the pros, and you're like, okay, whatever. You're just finding a way to skirt around the rules. I did feel a little better in the fact that they had at least a year in college. So hopefully they would get the bug and continue their education. So if they got hurt, because that happens a lot, if you get hurt or if you don't make the team because you just can't compete on that level, at least you have some college background to keep an education and hopefully be able to provide for you and your family. But when you cycle people through a system like that, you tend not to watch because you're like, there's nobody in this thing to care about. One of the things that the NFL did really well is they were like, okay, if you're not going to go to college, then you got to wait till you're this age and you got to have proper representation and you got to go through these channels. And their biggest goal was they didn't want somebody out of high school going out there against somebody that is a pro who is going to hurt you and break you. And that's not good for anybody. You know, I think they made a rule that you had to be in college for at least 2 years before you could go pro, maybe three. I think they've changed it over time, but, you know, the NFL did a better job of protecting the kids and sort of the integrity of the game. And the argument was made that they were doing that because they were all skimming money out of the colleges because for a long time the players didn't get paid. And now they are. Now, here's the fun part about that. Because they're getting paid, now it's worthwhile to stay in college, which is great. Listen, they should have been getting paid the entire time. It's just nobody could figure out how to do it properly. And the people who could figure it out properly were too greedy. They didn't want to give any money away. But this is the smarter way to do it. You got athletes out there who are participating in a very tough sport where they could get injured and never be able to afford to play again. But at least they can make a living so that they can afford to eat and buy a car. And if they were to blow out a knee, they at least have a little bit of money for their time that they were on the court or on the field. So you get players like Caitlin Clark, who is making a great living right now playing women's college basketball, and it's incentive for her to keep playing. She's announced she's going pro next year, which is cool. I think she actually makes more money playing college basketball than potentially she could make in the WNBA because viewership just hasn't returned to the WNBA yet. I think that's going to change. I think that people are changing. I think that the audience is changing. And again, a lot of it is due to her success. She is basically dragging the wagon. Her, Reese Witherspoon, I mean, there's a lot of these, not Reese Witherspoon, Angel Reese. There's a lot of these female athletes who are playing women's college basketball right now who are going to pave the way for the success of the WNBA in ways that haven't been done before. Now, of course, I've always known about players that stood out largely because of the NBA trying to highlight them as much as possible. Players like Cheryl Swoopes, who is the emblem of the WNBA. I watched her play in a NBA All-Star weekend where they had a three-point shoot around, and she was amazing. And they kept showing highlights of her doing stuff, and I was like, how is she able to do that? And she's only this height. It was just amazing to watch. But of course, then you know, over time you see better athletes come along, and or not better athletes, but you know, electrifying athletes. And, you know, Lisa Lobo comes to mind. But okay. So then the my list and my brain stops. Okay. This is 2024. I know Larry Bird's daughter's in there somewhere. I don't remember her name. Lisa Bird. I don't even know if that's correct. I don't know. Now, what I will know is I'll remember Caitlin Clark's name for a long time. And so will you. So just saying, it's exciting. I'm excited. I'm excited that players are getting paid. I'm excited that we live in a day of digital where we can look at every game everywhere that's happening. You know, there's a lot of times where I've wanted to watch her play and we're out of market because we don't live anywhere near Iowa. Here in South Carolina, it's kind of far. But because of the internet, I can access the local channels from Iowa or wherever they're playing, and I can watch one of their games right here, which is pretty awesome. So anyway, I just figured I'd share a little bit of that since it is March. Today is actually Easter. It's Easter Sunday. Happy Easter, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. I want to tell you about some stuff I heard, okay? Stuff I've saw, stuff I'm in, stuff I want to see. Listen, there's a series that's on Netflix. It's called Three Body Problem. And Netflix, from time to time, really, 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 really goes deep into their advertising because they're like, you guys just wait. This is going to be awesome. And sometimes it's for movies that are kind of duds, in my opinion, because they're just trying to drum up people to watch their channel for something. Believe it or not, I'm sure there's a good portion of the population that still does not sign up for Netflix. But this series was advertised, Three Body Problem, as sort of a science fiction-y thing. And from what I could tell from the advertising, it had the some of the creators of House of Dragons. What's the show? The HBO show. What's the one before House of Dragons? Not Lord of the Rings. What's the other one? Ah, crap, I'm blanking. David Benioff and D.B. Wise. What is it they did? Game of Thrones. God, why am I, my brain, I'll tell you. It is 5-something in the morning, so there you go. Yeah. These two guys, Daniel Brett Weiss and David Benioff, I guess that's how you pronounce that, worked on Game of Thrones. And we all know the huge success that Game of Thrones was. Well, they're doing this show, Three Body Problem. And right away in the advertisements, when they start showing people on the screen, I recognize two of the people. One of them is Sam. I was like, hey, there's Sam. And then the other one was the Lord Tormund or whatever they call them. Anyway, but I recognize a few of the characters from Game of Thrones. And I'm like, these guys convinced these other guys to come over and do this together. That's pretty cool. But it looks science fiction-y when I'm watching the previews. And it's got some awesome special effects. There's an element of, oh my God, I can't explain it. What's this all about? So anyway, when it came out March 21st, I thought, all right, I guess I'll watch this. And they advertised it with these glowing numbers in some lady's eye. It's a real creepy looking picture because it's kind of a close-up of someone's eye. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm real creeped out about things in people's eyeballs. Even before I got injured with my own eyeball injury, I remember watching Star Wars when I was a kid. And whenever they capture Leia, Darth Vader says, "We have ways of making you talk." And they get this orb thing that's got these needles sticking out of it. And they're holding her down. And she's like, and it comes straight at her face. And I could just picture this needle going in her eyeball. And I was just like, oh, my goodness gracious, that's awful. And then they did the same thing with Han Solo. And I was like, ah, I can't, in my brain, I kept thinking, no, that's the worst thing ever. Something going in your eye. I get squeamish anytime I think about it. Okay. And then of course you watch movies where things happen to people's eyes and then you're like, I don't want to watch this part. Like it's just, it makes you kind of queasy. Then I had an actual eye injury and it was my worst fear imagined and it happened. And, yeah, terrifying. So, you know, this advertisement with this lady's close up and she's got numbers scrolling across her eyeballs. I was just like, right away, terror. Okay. But anyway, so I watched the movie. I watched the show. It's a series. It's apparently based upon a book, a novel called Three Body Problem by Liu Cixin. C-I-X-I-N. I hope I pronounced that right. Probably didn't. I'm not Chinese. It's a Chinese novel. And this apparently is the second live action adaptation of the Chinese television series. Yeah. So here's the premise. Ying Wang is a astrophysicist who sees her father beaten to death during a struggle session in the Chinese Cultural Revolution. Basically, the Red Party wants to say that science is not real. And so they beat him to death on stage. And she witnesses this as his daughter. She is then conscripted, basically told by the government, you're going to do this, by the military because of her scientific background, and is sent to a secret military base in a remote region. Her faithful decision at the base echoes across space and time to a group of scientists in present day, forcing them to face humanity's greatest threat. So she watches her father get brutally killed on stage for being a scientist, for being a very smart guy. And then she's sent to a radio telescope to serve her sentence in prison after she almost dies in prison at another prison. She's sent to this radio telescope and she's super intelligent and she figures out its purpose before she's told what the radio telescope is for. She didn't even know it's a radio telescope. She just figures it out. So, yeah. It was pretty hard to watch, but also compelling because the actors are great and the way they told the story was great. Okay. So she gets there. What's the rundown here? I'm trying to read Wikipedia as I'm telling you guys what I'm doing. Cause I've watched the show but it's one of those things when you watch it and you binge it, you're like, now what happened? Kind of all happened fast. So yeah, 1960s timeline during the Cultural Revolution. She watches her father beaten to death. She's given a copy of a book called Silent Spring, and it is discovered where there's like propaganda, but she doesn't betray the one who gave it to her. And then because she had this book, they take her to prison and they almost kill her. And then they put her in this radio telescope thing. And suddenly she's out there with all sort of academics that jumps through the timeline a little bit. And you see these people discussing a hadron collider and how their research has gone bad. And this woman who you find out is the first woman's daughter commits suicide because she's so distraught over her life's work has turned out to be pointless. Basically, at least you think that's why. And they haven't exactly come full circle as to tell you the full story of why. But now you're left with a group of friends who are all like super scientists and buddies, and they all have to sort of figure out why their friend committed suicide and how her mother is somehow tied into all of this, and how, as the story progresses, it's tied into extraterrestrials. One of the women starts seeing numbers and a countdown in her head, and this woman shows up who turns out to be an assassin who tells her, stop your research or you won't like what happens when the countdown gets to zero. And it's just, listen, it's crazy. This show is crazy. There is extraterrestrials. There is a video game element where they put this thing on their head with technology that's far surpassed anything that we've come up with. They're transported across time and space to live out these examples of how to problem solve a situation. And they're told about what the three-body problem is. Okay. And I had to Google what the three-body problem is. Where is it? I was just looking at it. What is the three-body problem? Go back. Go back, baby. This is kind of like Bert Kreischer's open tabs. I'm talking to you about things I have in my tab that are open. What is the three-body problem? What? That's there. Come on. Can I go back? I can't go back. So when I click on these things, the internet wants to predict what I'm doing. What is the three-body problem? In physics, this is from Wikipedia. Let me zoom in on this. This is crazy. In physics and classical mechanics, three-body problem is the problem of making an initial position and velocities or momenta of three masses and solving for their subsequent motion. According to Newton's law of motion and Newton's law of gravitation, the three-body problem is a special case, unlike the two-body problem. No general closed-form solution exists. As a result, dynamic systems is chaotic, and for most initial conditions and numerical methods are generally required. What? Historically, the first specific three-body problem to receive extended study was the one involving the moon, the earth, and the sun. The three bodies, heavenly bodies. In an extended modern sense, the three-body problem is a problem in classical mechanics or quantum mechanics that models the motion of three particles. Okay, three particles. This was discovered by Newton, Sir Isaac Newton. Before he was Sir Isaac Newton, was he just Isaac? Listen, Isaac, you got some crazy ideas. And he's like, it is Dr. Newton. I went to astrophysicist school here in the Dark Ages, obviously. I don't know why he sounds like that. I just, whatever. So there's all kinds. Listen, if you Google this, it's got mathematical equations on here about where gravitational constants is set up in a 9-second order differential equation. Holy crap. The problem can also be stated in the Hamilton formalism, in which case it is described by a set of 18 first order differential equations for position R, I, and PI. In this case, H is simply the total energy of the system and the gravitational plus kinetic. Goodness gracious, that is complicated. So there's actually a graph. When you open Wikipedia and type in what is the three-body problem, that shows you three things that are being pulled in directions and what it is doing. It actually moves, not just a stationary graph, but a moving graph shows you what it is. So basically, it says here, in the restricted three-body problem, a body of negligible mass, or a planetoid, moves under the influence of two massive bodies having negligible mass. The planetoid experiences force on the two mass bodies that may be neglected, therefore resulting in a system that can be analyzed and described as a two-body motion problem with respect to a rotating reference frame. The two co-orbiting bodies are stationary, and the third can be stationary as well in a horseshoe orbit. Okay, then it gives examples. Okay. In a three-body problem, it is easier to analyze theoretical than a full problem. Cool. Okay. So anyway, it's complicated. It's complicated, but listen, as a show, it's impressive. It is complicated as a show, but it's also impressive. Yeah. I may need to do some research to understand my TV show. How about that? That's the kind of show I'm into. So here's what I like about the show. Okay. It has science fiction elements. It has thoughts about time and space and multi dimensions. They discuss the fact of things we don't know and can't perceive, and things that we've learned through science about the travel of light through time and space, how you can bounce things off of planets or the sun to increase the effectiveness of your transmissions. I've heard about that from, you know, people as well as, you know, I think Rogan had on a lady who's on the, what's that show where they're above the Arctic Circle, not Frozen Alive or whatever it's called, Sue. She lives above the Arctic Circle in Alaska area, and she figured out that she can't use her satellite dish to get a signal for the internet pointing at the sky. She actually points it at the ground and reflects it off the earth to the satellite and gets a phenomenal reception by bouncing it off the earth. But in simple terms, we're learning that kind of stuff. We're learning that we can bounce things off of planets and off of the sun to then get a better signal, because the sun radiates energy also at a rate faster than the speed of light. I know that sounds really crazy, but whatever. So there's elements of that. There's elements of life on other planets. There's elements of communication between beings that we don't know what they are or who they are. There's time and space issues of this woman who gets put in this radio telescope thing, basically sends a signal out in the 1960s of her current situation, and now is having to deal with the ramifications of that. There is that thought of, you know, I see life, I comment on it, I have an opinion. Does my opinion change over time, or am I still correct, even though the outcome is not what I would wish? There's all these elements of it. And on top of all of that, there is several love stories intertwined in this. And there are characters that are very evolved, and they are 100% into their character to the point that you buy in with them being every single person that they are in this show. This is one of the best shows I've seen in a while. So I highly recommend checking out Three Body Problem. You're going to be impressed. And if you're not, you know, I don't know what's wrong with you, but whatever. You're just not into cool stuff, I guess. That's all. Okay, switching gears. Lastly, there's a show on Netflix. It's a French television show that's been adapted for Netflix for me, so I can watch it with subtitles and people's voices dubbed over. Dubbed really well, as a matter of fact. Furies, F-U-R-I-E-S. I know some people are going to pronounce it furries. For whatever reason, we spell the word the same way. This is not about people who dress up in costumes. This is Furies, okay? What is Furies? What is the overview? Okay, here's a rundown, and it's very small. Seeking revenge for the death of her father, a young woman finds herself caught up in the web of the La Furie, the guardian of the Order of the Parisian Organized Crime. Ooh, ooh la la. So the premise is, to me, silly. You've got basically crime families, like seven or eight crime families that are all at war for a long time in Paris. And you have someone who is designated as the Fury, and they tell you the history of it and all this stuff. And that part is silly. Okay. But this Fury apparently regulates things between the mob families and stops them from being at war with one another. The premise is dumb. Okay. I'll just tell you that right now. For me, it's a dumb premise. The acting and the story from that point on is great. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed all of the characters. I enjoyed the action. It is a lot of blood and gore and guts and crazy scenarios of people getting severely injured and bouncing right back. Yeah, I liked it. A guy that my wife works with, he was like, you know, his name's Rich. Rich was like, hey, tell Josh he's got to check this show out. I'm enjoying it. I'm like, okay. He's pretty good on references on stuff like that. So I was like, I'll give him a shot. Tell him to watch Three Body Problem. So yeah, we've been kind of sharing shows between my wife. So that, whatever. Anyway, I liked all the characters. I like the acting. I like the idea that there's people out there that have abilities better than the average person to do whatever. And this is full of that. And it's done well. It's not done hokey. It's done really well. So yeah, I'm not going to talk a lot about that, but check it out if you're wanting some action shows. If you like John Wick, check this out. There you go. There's my sell. All right. Now, does anybody know who Dave Attell is? I'm just kind of curious. Back in 2001, Dave Attell had a show on Comedy Central. Excuse me. Called Insomniac. And Dave Attell was a young comedian back then. He came up with God, why am I blanking this morning? It is now 6. Okay. He came up with Dave Chappelle, where they did like a Young Comics real quick kind of thing on television. And I didn't watch that part. I maybe have seen him. I don't know. But 2001, I want to think I was out of the Marine Corps. I was home. I had bought a house. I think I'd started talking to my wife back when we were dating. We were dating around that time. And anyway, he had this show on TV called Insomniac. And the rundown of the show was he's a comedian, and he would take a camera crew after hours through cities all over the country to see what people did in the wee hours of the night. From a tattoo convention in Memphis, Tennessee, to ice fishing in Montreal, Attell stays up all night meeting bartenders, partygoers, and anyone else who will talk to him. And it was fun. It was a fun show. He basically just wanted to interact with people and kind of bring into light the culture of things that happen when most people are asleep. And I really enjoyed the show. Since then, he's done a lot of comedy. He's highly regarded by a lot of the comedians that I admire as being one of the best comedians they've ever seen work. I've seen him do a lot of things, from bumping mics, really great show, to, you know, countless podcasts where he comes on, and his humor is very quick. He has a lot of quick one-liners that loop into each other. And it's almost like he's solving a physics problem in motion while he's hitting you with jokes. And he loves to kind of poke fun at himself of the way he looks. I'm sure a lot of that has to come from just deflection and survival techniques and stuff like that. But to me, it's an interesting gateway into him being able to get you to open up and pay attention, because he's like, let me tell you jokes about me, and then I'm going to turn around and tell you jokes about you, and then I'm going to tell you jokes about why all of this is silly. And he's got a new special on Netflix called Hot Cross Buns, and it is awesome. It's awesome. It's quick. It's hilarious. Comes all back around to playing Hot Cross Buns on a recorder, which he does, and the audience does, and it's great. I'm a big Attell fan. I love it. I've seen him perform at Fully Loaded Festival. Yeah. So anyway, check it out. Check him out anywhere he's in your area. He is going to be on the Fully Loaded tour again this year. Got to check him out in person. It's really great. And that's it. I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you, everybody, for listening or watching, and I appreciate it. And if you can, please remember to rate, review, subscribe, share this with your friends. If you want to be on the podcast, let me know. We'll figure it out. If you got something you want me to watch or talk about, let me know. And yeah, y'all take care. And as always, cue the cow.
Cue the cow. Moo, baby.